Perfect. Good morning. Welcome, everyone, to the December 11th, 2025 Planning Commission meeting. I believe our last meeting of 2025. So thank you for being here. Okay, could we do a roll call, please?
Yes, good morning. Commissioner Lieberman?
Present.
Commissioner Viacana?
Here.
Commissioner Wyatt? Commissioner Avila? And Chair Shaw?
Here. And we will now stand for the flag salute, please.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay. We have a public announcement about a phishing campaign. I think we went over this last time. Do we want to go over this again?
We do, because there's a continued effort.
Okay. So do we want to do this now or during planning, staff, and commission updates?
We can do it now.
Okay.
Whatever you're...
Yeah, let's go for it. Thank you.
Okay. Public service announcement is planning staff would like to inform members of the public that there is an active phishing campaign impersonating the county planning department and county planning commission requesting payment of approval fees via wire transfer. Please remember the county does not request wire payments and official emails come from the email ending at co.slo.ca.us address. If you or your clients receive a message like this, please do not reply or send funds. Instead, if you could please forward the email to Eric Vitale in the district attorney's office at evitale@co.slo.ca.us and reach out to the Department of Planning and Building to confirm any payment or correspondence. And thank you for helping us ensure our processes remain secure.
Thank you. And now I'm going to open public comment. This is just for items that are not on our agenda today. Do we have any speaker requests?
No requests to speak.
Okay, then I'm going to go ahead and close public comment. I'm going to now bring it to planning staff updates, and I think that will be Eric Hughes today.
Thank you and good morning, Chair Shaw, members of the commission. Eric Hughes here, division manager with Current Planning, here to provide the commission with updates on recent Board of Supervisor actions and then a preview of your upcoming schedule. I will note that there are a little bit more than usual board items, so bear with me here as I run through these. But going back to November 18th, the board meeting, there was a consent item. It was the final adoption to amend the development agreement between the County of San Luis Obispo and NKT Development for the Dana Reserve Specific Plan. That was approved by a vote of 3-2. There's a board business. The board authorized a request for Del Mar Ranch LLC for a general plan amendment with a new specific plan to develop the Del Mar Ranch, which is an approximately 154-acre parcel in the Arroyo Grande Fringe area. That was approved 3-2. Then there was a hearing to consider an amendment to the general plan conservation open space element to improve public access to open space and for consistency with SB 1425. That was approved 5-0. There was also a hearing to consider the appeals by Harmony Communities on behalf of Oak Terrace Mobile Home Park and the Buena Vista Mobile Home Park of the Mobile Home Rent Review Board's denial of a hardship application. The appeal was denied and the Mobile Home Rent Review Board upheld. The Mobile Home Rent Review Board's decision was upheld 5-0. Also was a hearing to consider an appeal by Dustin Robinson of the Planning Commission's denial of a request for a parcel map to subdivide approximately 29.99 acre parcel into five total parcels for residential development. This was located at 1030 Pump Handle Lane, just outside the southern limits of the city of Paso Robles. The board denied the appeal and upheld the Planning Commission's decision with a 4-1 vote. Moving on to the board meeting on December 9th, there was a request by Black Lake Golf Resort LLC for the authorization to process an amendment for the Black Lake specific plan. The purpose is to allow additional single-family dwelling units and 80 additional units that may be utilized as vacation homes and short-term rentals, a new event and resort area, hotels and motels, and accessory dwellings as permitted uses in the specific areas. The project is located at the Black Lake, and it's part of the Black Lake Specific Plan area located in South County, and that was approved 3-2. The next is a hearing to consider an appeal by Patrick McGibney of the Los Osos Sustainability Group of the Planning Department Hearing Officer's request by Jean-Paul Kane for a minor use permit, coastal development permit, to construct an approximately 5,000 square foot two-story residence in the community of Los Osos. The board denied the appeal and upheld the Planning Department Hearing Officer's decision with a 5-0 vote. Next was a hearing, an introduction to an amendment to the Growth Management Ordinance, Title 26 of County Code, for consistency with housing objectives and to encourage housing production. This was approved 4-1, and it's going back for final reading to the board on December 16th. The last is a hearing to amend the Building and Construction Ordinance, Title 19, adopting the 2025 edition of the California Building Code Standards, and this was approved by the board 5-0. Moving on, looking at your upcoming schedule, the next scheduled meeting is January 8th. We have two items for that day. The first is a request by Bonaire Investments for a development plan, coastal development permit, and a condominium parcel map to construct a 12-unit hotel condominium project. The proposed project is within the commercial retail land use category, located at 1319 Van Buren Drive in the community of Los Osos. The second item is a request by the Towers LLC for a conditional use permit to allow the construction of a telecommunications and public utility facility consisting of a 70-foot tall monopine. The project is located at 202 Easy Street in the community of Templeton. And that does it for staff's updates. Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much. Do any commissioners have updates? Okay, seeing none, I am going to take us into, I will call for public comment on these updates. Seeing no one step forward, I'm going to close public comment. And I'm going to take us to the consent agenda. Does anyone want to discuss or pull any items on the consent?
I had one question, so that's a yes.
Okay. Do you want to ask your question before we go to public comment?
Sure. Yeah. Eric, there was a letter in the file on the consent agenda item that seemed to have something to do with another project. It was posted not to our cluster package, but on the website. So I think that was just misposted, but I wanted to verify and let anyone know who may have seen that. That doesn't appear to have anything to do with this project.
I can confirm that. I'll check into that.
Okay. So maybe we could be voting on that assumption or, it seemed to be relating to an Oceano project and not this Cayucas project. So sorry, didn't bring that up in advance. I was late.
Okay. Commissioner Wyatt, we're just verifying real quick that comment letter was posted to the wrong agenda item.
I'm guessing it's something that's coming soon or may require a little more discussion given the nature of the comments.
And it is confirmed that the letter is for a different item.
Okay, thanks for that. Which project? We're on the consent item, which is the conformity report for the Cayucas Corner parcel at Old Creek. So while we're there, that parcel has a long and interesting development history. And so I'm pleased to see something coming along and maybe moving forward for that dusty lot.
Okay, and so let's open public comment on this item. I'm seeing no one come forward, so I'm going to close public comment. Is there any further discussion on the item, or would someone like to make a motion?
Yep, I'll move that we approve the consent agenda.
I'll second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. If we could have a roll call vote, please.
Commissioner Wyatt?
Yep.
Commissioner Viacana?
Yes.
Commissioner Lieberman?
Yes.
Commissioner Avila?
Yes.
And Chair Shaw?
Yes. Okay. And now we're going to move into our hearing items. Hearing to consider a request by Norgrove Gardens LLC for a conditional use permit to allow the phased construction of a new winery and distillery facility with a shared tasting room, a special event program of up to 20 events per year with 150 guests, use of the existing tram to provide wine tasting and public tours. So the recommendation I see for this item is to continue to January 22nd. I don't know if we want to do a full introduction or take it away.
Eric Hughes, County Planning and Building. Yes, so the when we sent the hearing notice out for this project, we did receive a letter from a neighbor opposing the project, and staff had requested additional time to address those comments. However, we did receive, the applicant team contacted me last night and has actually requested to move this, continue it to March 26th Planning Commission. And to allow additional time to address some of the environmental review related questions. And I don't know, we also have the applicant team here if there's any additional insight they'd like to provide, but staff is in support of that request.
Okay. Now, yeah, I don't know if you want to answer a question, but is this the, because I think the owner contacted me and I'm not sure anyone else to try to set up a tour, and we set it up for January because we, but now it's not going to happen until March. I don't know if you want to give any.
Good morning, Jamie Jones representing the applicant. Yeah, we were originally requesting a continuance until the 22nd of January, but upon further reflection of the comments received, we expect that there will potentially be some updates to the M&D that's been prepared. So we just want to have adequate time to incorporate those comments and recirculate the document. We don't think that can happen between now and January 22nd. So we want to just make sure we have an adequate document whenever we come to you for consideration. So you can consider your request for site visit canceled, postponed.
Oh, all right.
And you're all welcome to join as well, or at least three of you, or two of you. So,
all right then. All right. Well, all right. Thank you. Thank you for that update. And okay, so do we do a? Do I take a motion for a continuance?
Chair Shaw, if you could formally open public comment.
Okay, so I'll formally open public comment on that item.
No request to speak.
No request. I will close that. And then
now you're looking for motion.
Okay, now I think I'm looking for a motion.
So I'll make a motion to continue this to a date certain, March 26th.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Could we do a roll call vote?
Commissioner Viacana?
Yes.
Commissioner Lieberman?
Yes.
Commissioner Wyatt?
Yes.
Commissioner Avila?
Yes.
And Chair Shaw?
Yes. Okay, thank you. All right, now we will move on to hearing to consider a request by Ryan Lindberg for an amendment to a previously approved conditional use permit to permit a 30,000 gallon propane tank and support appurtenances. And if we could have our clerk and staff introduce the item.
Yes, Eric Hughes, County Planning and Building. Presenting this item today will be Eric Hughes, myself. going to be a little bit unconventional. I'm going to actually just present the item from up here at the dais. And with that, I'll take it away. So this is a request by Ryan Lindberg for an amendment. Something's going on here. Amend 2024-00006 to a conditional use permit D990243D. Please excuse the little updates that are pinging up there. Oop. Just give us a few seconds here as we reconfigure the computer screen. Perfect, thank you. So just a little background on the project description. You know, as I said, this is an amendment to a conditional use permit, and the project is to permit an above ground 30,000 gallon propane tank. The project also includes a distance modification request to allow the tank within 500 feet of a residential land use category, and then less than a 50-foot setback from the eastern property line. Just a little bit of background on the site. There are some existing industrial uses and buildings, and also other propane storage tanks used for wholesale distribution, and then parking and landscaping that were approved under previous conditional use permits and minor use permits. Again, this particular permit is just for the 30,000 gallon propane tank. So here's the site. You can see it's just south of Welsona Road near Highway 101. Here's a little bit better picture of the land use category map. It is actually zoned industrial, and it's surrounded by residential suburban on the west, agriculture to the east. And I would just note that this parcel is actually subject to very specific land uses, and so propane fuel storage is actually one of those uses. So it is consistent with our zoning. Here's an aerial map just showing the location of the site and just referencing some of the distances. As you can see, there's a residential land use category to the east, and then a residence to the, residential land use category to the west, and also a residence to the east. Here's a picture of the site plan. You can see the proposed location of the propane tank. And also there's an existing metal building, parking, and access that has already been established. And here we go, just a overview of some pictures of the site, so you can just see what we're looking at here. And this is what's existing. And so as you can see back where these trucks are, kind of in the top left corner, that's approximately the propane tank will go in that location there. With that, I would also just acknowledge that the project was reviewed by the Santa Margarita Advisory Council, who recommended approval. With that, the project is exempt from the California Environmental Quality Act, subject to a general rule exemption. And staff is recommending that the commission approve amend 2024-00006 to a previously approved conditional use permit based on the findings listed in Exhibit A and the conditions listed in Exhibit B. That concludes staff's presentation, and I'm available for any questions. Thank you.
Okay, does anyone have initial questions for staff at this time? Okay, I don't see any, so I'm gonna open public comment on this item. Do we have requests to speak?
No requests to speak.
Okay, I have seen no requests to speak, so I'm gonna close public comment, and I see a microphone on, so.
I was just gonna say ex parte that I do know the applicants. I purchased propane from them for a number of years, so anyway, I just wanted to make sure.
All right, thank you. Any other ex parte on that? Okay, thank you. All right, so now we will move into deliberations. Okay, go for it.
No, if you're okay, I'll make the motion.
Okay.
Yeah, if anybody, okay. Everybody's okay with it. Okay, I'll go ahead and make the motion to approve an amendment, amend 2024-00006 to a previously approved conditional use permit, D990243D, based on the findings listed in Exhibit A and the conditions listed in Exhibit B.
We have a motion, do we have a second?
Second.
Okay, any discussion on the motion? Or anything? All right, I'm very heartened and confident that we have a retired fire chief up here that just seconded the motion, and I and also the San Miguel Advisory Body. I thank them for their work on this too. I saw their report. So if we want to do a roll call,
yes, Commissioner Viacana.
Yes.
Commissioner Lieberman?
Yes.
Commissioner Wyatt?
Yes.
Commissioner Avila?
Yes.
And Chair Shaw?
Yes. Okay. Next item is a hearing to consider a request by applicant Damian Mavis for an amendment to the development plan through a conditional use permit. Two modifications to the approved development plan are requested. One, for the winery to expand their current wine pairing food service and allow restaurant services to exceed the 800 square foot limit within approved visitor serving areas. Two, remove conditions 9 and 10 from the 2001 development plan to allow seating and tasting on the ground floor terraces and upper terraces. No additional floor area, building expansion, or change of occupancy is proposed. Let me hand this off then to the project team.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the Commission. My name is Lane Sutherland, and I'm the project planner for the amendment request. The applicant, 3090 Anderson LLC, is requesting an amendment to Development Plan D000234D, previously approved in 2001. No new development or site improvements are requested as a part of the amendment request, and all changes would utilize existing facilities. The first request is for the winery to expand current wine pairing food services and allow limited restaurant services. Additionally, the applicant has requested approval to exceed the 800 square foot limit on limited food service areas, allowing for a total of 4,663 square feet of space to be utilized. The applicant has also requested to remove conditions 9 and 10 from the 2001 development plan to allow seating and tasting on the ground floor terraces and upper terraces. The project site is located west on Highway 46 from the Templeton and Paso Robles Urban Reserve Line boundaries in the Adelaida sub-area of the North County Planning Area. The project parcel is within the agricultural land use category, and as shown here, it's surrounded by agricultural zoning on nearby parcels. The project site is a 25-acre parcel. Existing uses on site include two residential structures, three vineyards, a barrel room and case storage building, a winery building, and a hospitality building. Proposed uses will occur within the existing visitor serving areas within and surrounding the hospitality building, specifically the tasting room, kitchen, and outdoor terraces. The proposed limited food serving facility will remain incidental to the primary use on site as a winery facility. These graphics here exhibit the proposed limited food service areas within the existing facilities. To reiterate, the applicant is requesting permission to increase the 800 square foot limit and utilize 4,663 square feet referenced here. These areas include the seating areas previously prohibited by conditions 9 and 10 from the 2001 development plan. Staff would like to note that the expanded limited food service use would remain within the same structure as the tasting room and would continue to function as an accessory component to the primary winery operation on the site. In 2015, a 17,808 square foot production building was constructed, significantly expanding winery operations and reestablishing a balanced ratio between production and visitor serving space. Due to these changes between the original approval and today's circumstances, staff is in support of the requested amendments to the entitlement, allowing for limited food services within a 4,663 square foot facility and removing conditions 9 and 10 from the entitlement. The project was referred to several county departments for their review. All comments received from county agencies were addressed through project revisions or conditions of approval. Staff recommends that the Planning Commission find the project exempt from the California Environmental Quality Act and approve amend 2025-00007 based on the findings listed in Exhibit A and the conditions listed in Exhibit B. That concludes staff's presentation. Planning staff is available to answer any questions at this time. The applicant's agent, Lainey Kastner of Kirk Consulting, has also prepared a presentation, I believe, and is available to answer any questions.
Thank you for that report. Does anyone have any preliminary questions or questions for staff? Okay. Then I'm going to go ahead and open public comment. Do you have any requests to speak?
Yes. We have applicant. Yeah, from the applicant's team.
Good morning, Planning Commissioners. My name is Lainey Kastner with Kirk Consulting, and I am here today on behalf of the Anderson to amend the previously approved land use permits. If you're not familiar with the location of the existing winery, the site is located west of Highway 101 on the north side of Highway 46 and the corner of Anderson Road, just under 2 miles from the city of Paso Robles. The site is a total of 25 acres, complete with an existing winery, tasting room, vineyards, residences, and an event program. The property has a well-established history in Paso Robles, first developed as Eagle Castle Winery in 1999 and approved in 2001 for a full winery and hospitality operation. Known for its distinctive medieval castle, the site quickly became a regional landmark. In 2013, the property was revitalized by Rob Murray and reopened as Tooth & Nail Winery, later expanding in 2015 with a 17,800 square foot production and storage facility to support growing operations. In addition to a winery facility, Tooth & Nail served as a tasting room, event venue, and tourist attraction. After more than a decade of operation, Tooth & Nail Winery closed in 2024, creating new opportunities for the property under new ownership. The CUP amendment request includes amending the 2001 development plan to allow a limited food serving facility, better known as a restaurant, within the existing hospitality building to enhance offerings at the tasting room. The amendment will also modify the ordinance that limits a restaurant to 800 square feet to allow for a restaurant that will sufficiently serve the tasting room. Lastly, the amendment requests to remove conditions 9 and 10 from the original 2001 development plan to allow permanent seating on the terraces, which was previously restricted. This request proposes an amendment to allow a 4,663 square foot limited food serving facility within the existing hospitality building, utilizing the current kitchen and expansive tasting room, commonly referred to as a restaurant from here on out. The existing 932 square foot kitchen will serve several purposes, including the restaurant, tasting room, and events. The restaurant includes approximately 1,905 square feet of seating, with both indoor and outdoor areas to accommodate guest preferences. A total of 1,826 square feet of the existing east and west terraces are proposed as overflow opportunities to accommodate visitor needs and events. The hospitality building's layout provides circulation among the kitchen, restrooms, outdoor patios, and staff areas, seamlessly connecting the restaurant and tasting room. All proposed use areas are existing. No new construction or building expansion is proposed, and the existing parking spaces exceed the required amount. Additionally, the restaurant's hours of operations will remain within the limits set by the land use ordinance, limiting the facility to operate only between the hours of 7 a.m. and 9 p.m. The purpose of including a restaurant within the tasting room is to enhance the overall visitor experience. It allows for an expanded menu beyond traditional wine pairings and provides meal options independent of wine service so non-drinking guests can fully participate. This approach encourages responsible consumption, extends the length of visitor stays, creates additional sales opportunities, offers enhanced culinary experiences, and aligns with the post-COVID industry trends integrating food service with wine tasting. This request includes a modification to the county's limited food serving facility standard, which currently limits kitchen and dining areas to 800 square feet in agricultural zones. That 800 square foot limit was originally established to prevent full-scale commercial restaurants in agricultural areas. We are proposing to dedicate 4,663 square feet of existing visitor serving space within the hospitality building to function as a restaurant component, in addition to tasting room operations. Considering the hospitality building is nearly 20,000 square feet in total and will continue to operate primarily as a tasting room, that 800 square foot limit just isn't practical for how the space is already functioning. Importantly, this is not a new expansion. The space is already used for tastings and the food and wine pairing program. No new construction is proposed. The modification is appropriate because it relies solely on existing visitor serving areas and continues to function as an accessory use to the primary winery operations, consistent with county agricultural policies. Therefore, the standard is unnecessary and ineffective. This request also includes a modification to remove conditions 9 and 10 from the 2001 development plan. This will allow permanent seating, tasting, or dining facilities on the ground floor terraces and upper terraces as shown outlined in blue to support the ongoing and proposed uses of a limited food serving facility. The initial approval heavily emphasized visitor serving elements, things like a bed and breakfast, hospitality center, and special event areas. Altogether, these areas were more than twice the size of the production facility, which signaled the hospitality could become the dominant use. Because of this, conditions 9 and 10 were added to restrict tasting and dining on the terraces to keep the winery production use clearly primary. In 2015, the site added a new 17,808 square foot production building, which shifted the balance back towards production. This created a more proportional relationship between hospitality and production areas. Now, roughly 35% hospitality and 65% production. With additional production use area, using the rooftop and ground level terraces for visitor serving uses is consistent with the site's overall function. To conclude, no new construction is involved. All facilities and areas are existing with no expansion proposed. The limited food serving facility will allow for an expanded menu beyond traditional wine and food pairings. This request does not represent a change in use. It solely enhances the visitor experience through additional menu offerings. Modifying the allowable size of the limited food serving facility will not impact the primary winery operations. Removing conditions 9 and 10 will allow permanent seating on terraces for tastings, the restaurant, events, and overflow. We request the Planning Commission approve the conditional use permit amendment to incorporate a limited food serving facility into the existing winery and tasting operations based on the findings, conditions, and staff's recommendation. Thank you, commissioners, for your consideration. I'm joined by Jamie Jones with Kirk Consulting and members of the ownership team to answer any questions.
Thank you. Does anyone have questions of the applicant while she's up here? Yeah, go ahead.
Do you want to go first? Go. Do you have time first? Okay. Thanks for the presentation. I have two questions. Could you tell us, please, what the case processing number was for a recent year or two? So we get some idea of this kind of comparison. You've given a kind of 30-60 split-ish. I'd just be curious what the case production is for all of that processing space. Often we look at kind of the ag production, not just the ags, the square footage.
Good morning. My name is Damian Mavis. I'm one of the property owners. I don't have a case production number, but during this year's crush, we did like 900 tons of processing.
Okay.
So it's significant. I mean, that continues to be the dominant business on the property.
Okay. Any quick math processor over there with his calculator? Somebody? 60,000 cases. Okay, thanks. That's a big number. That's what I was looking for.
Thank you.
Thanks. And then one of you maybe, since you're up, I didn't look at the maps closely of the Highway 46 Anderson intersection. Is there a left turn lane there at Anderson, or any reported issues that staff knows about? So no left turn lane there. So any reported issues with left turn movements off of Anderson Road that could affect us if somehow numbers go up with more hospitality activity and more people coming to a restaurant or some such?
Jamie Jones, I think I'll take that question.
Okay.
So there is not a left-hand turn lane at Anderson Road today. The expectation is with the projects that we bring forward with incorporating the food services, that we're serving the customers that are already there. But I will say that we have another project just to the west of this property where we were adding some additional visitor serving uses and production uses, and we looked at a left-hand turn lane warrants analysis at that intersection with Anderson, and one was not warranted. So we weren't required to do it for this project because this project wasn't looked at as adding traffic, but we did have some recent analysis done there.
Okay, so thanks for that. Public Works, anything from your end on that? To confirm that, we could expect some growth. I think we'll, it gets more comments, but but I'm going to bring it up as relevant here. I think with the increase, the food service, I mean, the point of this is being able to serve people who don't drink much, maybe like me, who might come for a meal but not want the booze so much. So I do think there is a possibility this could increase the numbers. And we are on an arterial 46 here, so I don't see that as a big problem. But I think the numbers could go up. So just want to make sure our intersection there would accommodate that.
Sure. J.R. Beard, Public Works. So because, as you mentioned, it adjoins, you know, State Route 46, so a Caltrans facility, I am not aware of any issues with regards to queuing on Anderson Road. We did actually work with another applicant on the same roadway to do some beautification along it. And with that, essentially, I'm not aware of any issues that were caused by the current operations of all the wineries on this vicinity. And we would concur with the applicant's statement about this isn't really going to generate any additional trips because it's just meant to enhance the experience of those that are already there. Even though, as you also mentioned, that it could bring a few more people that, you know, it's who knows. But yeah, we feel like the adequacy is there right now for it.
Okay. Thanks for that, everyone.
Thank you.
Oh, and did you have a comment or a question before? I thought your microphone was on before. No?
No.
Okay. All right. Okay, next. Do we have any other public comment?
No additional requests.
Okay, then I'm going to go ahead and close public comment, and I will invite deliberations or a motion. Anyone? Thoughts or... I'm glad you gave the history. I think I was there when it was called Eagle Castle, but I can't even disclose that because I remember nothing. So I think I remember, yeah. I do remember the castle, so there we go. But okay. Well, I'll take a motion if there's no deliberation.
I just make a comment before a motion gets made. I sometimes have concerns, as many of you have heard, with the expansion of the hospitality, sometimes overtaking the kind of production and ag aspect, and our balance there, our important balance to that one supports the other and one is secondary to the other. But in this case, with that amount of existing space and off of 46 that has clean access, I don't have any problems with this expansion, and I'd be pleased to support a motion.
Okay, is that a motion?
Yeah, so I will go ahead and make a motion. I think this is actually a good use of this space. I mean, it really makes sense for what's there, and I actually do feel actually integrating food into the wine kind of tasting experience is important to kind of slow down people a little bit and make the road safer. Getting food in people's stomachs is, I think, makes everything a little bit safer. And so I'm supportive of this as well. So anyway, I will make the motion to go ahead and approve the conditional use permit modifications, amend 2025-0007 based on the findings listed in Exhibit A and the conditions listed in Exhibit B.
I'll second that.
Okay, we've got a motion and a second. Could we have a roll call vote, please?
And I apologize, Chair Shaw, ex parte just to on this.
Yes, does anyone else have ex parte?
Nope.
Okay. And I believe Commissioner Viacana and second by Commissioner Wyatt, correct? Commissioner Viacana?
Yes.
Commissioner Wyatt?
Yeah.
Commissioner Lieberman?
Yes.
Commissioner Avila?
Yes.
And Chair Shaw?
Yes. All right, thank you so much. We will now move to item 7. This is a hearing to consider an amendment to the Inland and Coastal Land Use Ordinances to amend Section 23.4.320 of Outdoor Lights, the section and the section on exterior lighting, the definitions for light source, amending other sections of noticing radius requirements to 1,000 feet, for projects, and amend sections 23.494, 22.3450 to require approval by majority vote for the granting of a permit, lease, or authorization for construction, installation, or expansion of onshore support facilities for offshore gas and oil activities in compliance with Measure A, and expand school district housing and public facilities land use category to the coastal zone. So very mixed bag. So that's my introduction. I will hand that over to the staff and the project team. Happily hand that over.
Commissioner, or Chair Shaw, Eric Hughes, Planning and Building. We would like to request a 5-minute break. We're having some technical difficulties with the computer here.
Okay, sounds good. Or do we think, okay, 5? Okay. Okay, 9:45. All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, we're ready to come off the break. Okay, thank you. And yes, let's have the presentation on item number 7, please. Thank you.
All right, Eric Hughes, Planning and Building, presenting this item. We have Planner Kip Morris, right? And in support, we have Supervising Planner Holly Phipps.
Good morning. Thank you, Eric. Thank you, members of the commission. My name is Kip Morris with the Planning Department, and the item before you is the Minor Ordinance Amendment Package for 2025, which consists of 4 updates affecting Title 22, Title 23, and also the Coastal Zone Framework for Planning, Table O. So the 4 updates before your commission this morning are updates to lighting standards in Title 22 and 23 to eliminate an exception to those lighting standards, expanding the noticing radius required for projects and appeals within rural areas of the county, codifying Measure A, which was a piece of legislation that was passed in 1986 regarding support facilities for offshore oil and gas extraction, and expanding school district housing to the coastal zone. The following slides discuss these 4 amendments in greater detail. So the first update consists of amendments to Title 22 and Title 23 pertaining to lighting standards. So for a bit of background on this, Beautify Cambria is a community organization that has been advocating for a long time for a dark skies ordinance similar to what exists in the city of San Luis Obispo. And while the board has not identified the drafting of a dark skies ordinance as a tier 1 priority for this year, these minor changes represent an achievable goal that could be realized in the short term. Effectively, the update would require all light sources used for ground illumination except natural gas and other fuels to be shielded from above in a manner that the edge of the shield is level with or below the lowest edge of the light source. And this would eliminate the exception for incandescent lamps of 150 watts or less that were previously exempt from this shielding requirement. That's the shielding kicking in right there. The update would also add light-emitting diodes to the definition of light sources in Title 22 and 23, and this would assist code enforcement in their enforcement efforts. The second update increases the noticing requirements in Title 22 and 23 for projects located outside the urban and village reserve lines from 300 to 1,000 feet. This is an increase from the requirements of California Government Code, which require a noticing radius of 300 feet. The intent of this amendment is to increase public awareness, especially in areas where larger parcel sizes result in fewer people being noticed. This amendment would apply to all planning projects and appeals, including minor use permits, conditional use permits, variances, and their amendments. It should also be noted that the noticing radius can already be increased at the director's discretion on a project-specific basis. So the planning director can increase possibly even greater than 1,000 feet on a case-by-case basis in certain circumstances. The third amendment is an update to codify Measure A. So Measure A was a ballot measure passed in the 1986 San Luis Obispo County general election and requires approval by a majority vote cast in a general election or special election for any onshore support facilities for offshore oil and gas extraction. So this is already a law, and this is a cleanup item, just making sure that that's in Title 22 and Title 23. And the language included in the update directly reflects the language that was passed by Measure A. The fourth amendment pertains to school district housing. So on March 25th, 2025, the Board of Supervisors approved an ordinance amending Title 22 to allow school district housing within the public facilities land use category. And for context, this came about in connection to the SLO County Office of Education site. The school district housing in this case is defined in Title 22 as residential development that meets certain affordability and occupancy criteria, including being qualified as affordable rental housing with a majority of rents restricted to levels that are affordable to persons and families of low or moderate income. School district housing would only be allowed in the public facility land use category when owned by a local education agency, and occupancy would be limited. So firstly, it would be made available to teachers, faculty, and school, our community college district employees, and secondly, it would be made available to local public employees. And the language in this amendment is exactly the same as that in Title 22. This is just applying that to the coastal zone. So it is therefore staff's recommendation that the Planning Commission recommend the Board of Supervisors adopt the ordinance amending Title 22 and Title 23 and the Coastal Zone Framework for Planning. This concludes staff's presentation. Thank you.
Okay, does anyone have any questions for staff?
I do. So the housing for the schools, that was not amended into the coastal zone prior, is that what you're saying? So this is just an amendment to add it into that?
That's correct.
Another question?
Good morning. You shared some context on the educational housing, context on the noticing increase. Does that have anything to do with the Napomo battery plant that I followed in the news, or is there some specific driver on that one?
I think Mark will take this question.
Good morning, Mark LaRue, Planning and Building. So that you are correct. There was a direction from the board, I believe, earlier this year, may have been March or April, regarding the battery storage notification in Napomo. That notification at that time was only 300 feet. So it was agreed that noticing was inadequate for that type of project. It was requested that battery storage be 1,000 feet rather than limit just battery storage to 1,000 feet. We decided to in working with council to make a notification of 1,000 feet, anything outside the URL would be 1,000 feet. Anything inside the URL is still 300 feet. However, as Kip mentioned earlier, the department has the ability to make a determination to change the noticing distance for any specific project. For example, the Phillips 66 project, the decommissioning, I think they did a noticing of 4,000 feet on that project. And so projects that have an industrial use or a greater impact to a community, we can change that noticing requirement. So, but in this case, we're going to, across the board, it's 1,000 feet outside the URL, 300 feet inside the URL, with the ability to make an adjustment on a specific project.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
What kind of cost does that add to a project when you have to notice that many more people on some of these things? Is it substantial, or?
I'll defer to Eric Hughes on that.
I apologize. Commissioner Viacconi, can you please repeat your question?
I guess I'm just trying to figure out what kind of cost that would add to a project for an applicant going through something like this to have to notice. I mean, there could potentially be quite a few more people that they have to notice. Does that add substantially to the cost of a project?
Eric Hughes, County Planning Building. I couldn't say for sure how much, but obviously the cost of, you know, postage and any staff time, preparing the letters and sending them out. So I don't know if I'd call it substantial, but yes, there would be, you know, an added cost.
I guess I was thinking, does it take a lot of staff time to basically come up with the list and the letters out? No. Okay.
No.
I had a similar question. I mean, about how many projects or how much more noticing do you think this will require?
Holly Phipps, planning staff. With the noticing, you know, a lot of it's done electronically, and so when we do that doesn't take any more additional staff time. You're just increasing the noticing. The time falls onto our administrative assistants when they're getting out those notices, so that could add some added staff time in that case. And then if Danielle, if you had anything to add to that.
Typically, the amount of notices that would go out wouldn't increase substantially, especially because these tend to be larger parcels and more kind of spread out. So I can't imagine that. And I think the intent behind this is to be able to capture those parcels that are larger in size and maybe have more distance from the project site. We haven't seen a huge increase where it would be a significant cost to the department.
Okay.
And I think that the noticing fees are already built into the land use case fees when they're initially paid. So.
Okay. Thank you. I just, and in asking that question and maybe in the answer, I mean, my concern is when you're, you know, additional noticing is going to lead to additional opposition, and in a time and a place where getting things constructed is already very difficult and expensive. I just, you know, it is your recommendation to do this and go above and beyond, but I want you to be cognizant that I want you to be able to do your jobs without, you know, too much more. So if you feel comfortable with that, I am comfortable, but speak now or forever hold your peace.
Questions or yeah. Are we mixing questions? You,
let's okay. mix. I don't see a ton of public comment, okay. but maybe okay. we will have
we
one.
Are. Okay, we are then. Well, thanks for this, staff. It's great to see some of these cleanups. I had a suspicion Claudia and Cambria were involved in this lighting ordinance when I read it, the changes there. Howard, a question for you. We're talking about wattages under 150 watts here. So how would this affect something like the standard Costco string of party lights that we see all over that aren't shielded? You know, the solar $39 string that's every other house you look at on the block, including mine, a bunch of mine. So are they suddenly going to become illegal and code enforcement is going to have Claudia and others on us for our party lights?
Thank you for your question. So I think actually most of those party lights are now LEDs anyway, so that exception wouldn't have applied to them. You know, this is for ground illuminating lights specifically. I would also like to mention that code enforcement can't actually work at night. So without special authorization. So really, this is designed to ensure that, you know, lights that have, you know, they have a shielding, some kind of shielding, that shielding is something that they can actually address and look at during the day, because they can't come out at night without special authorization and look at where the light is going. But this enables code enforcement to actually look at the shielding and say, well, does it meet the county requirements or not? And so that's the intent of this ordinance.
So we need to take down our party lights during the day and string them back up after 5 o'clock. I'm a little concerned here, practically speaking, on what this means, because help us understand, are you saying LEDs are excluded? I thought we were including language for LEDs in as part of this. So maybe I don't understand what's being proposed.
Yeah, so that exception, if you read the language, was specifically accepting incandescent lights. So my point is that exception never would have applied to LED lights.
The exception for the less than 150 yeah. watts?
Yeah, the language
okay,
that is being...
I misread that then.
Yeah, the language that is being removed was an exception for incandescent lamps, specifically of 150 watts or less. Incandescent lamps.
Okay, incandescent, but the exception would still apply for LEDs under 150 watts wouldn't be subject to the shielding rule.
No, there was never an exception for LEDs specifically.
Regardless of wattage.
But so our low-watt party lights would then, under some scenario, be not allowed?
If they ground illuminate us.
They light up the ground and the sky. I completely get the intent of this and understand and agree that unshielded lights can go crazy, but I like the party lights. And we're in comment. Maybe we should open public comment. Let me see if I have a few other direct questions. Okay, well, I have a direct question. 39 years later for Measure A, we got a little time here. I'm just kind of curious on that one. Commissioner Lieberman asked about the lighting or something, but how does 39 years later we catch up on cleanups, Measure A cleanups? What's the story there?
And I would maybe look at Ben and say, something standard as well.
It's a lot of years. I can see a year or two or five, but
I don't have a comment on this. So the idea is just these are just minor things that we're just trying to clean up, and I don't have an explanation for the
of
timeline
who found
between,
this.
Between when it was adopted and now.
Interesting.
Why, I guess. Is there a project that's coming forward that just spurred us to take this on now?
Someone somewhere noticed this, but they shall not be identified.
I'm not sure the why it's happening now.
Okay, I just couldn't quite resist on that one. And I've got a few comments, but I'll wait. Maybe there's a member of the public who wants to.
I'm going to go ahead.
The windmills with the spurring of the lighting for offshore. I think that was dug up. And that project something.
Maybe.
Okay, I'm going to open public comment. Do we have a speaker request? No? Okay, I'm going to close public comment. So now we'll bring it back for discussion. I'm still a little unclear on I was hearing it that the LED, that if a party light was LED, it was not covered by this anyway. But did I miss that?
Yeah, the changes that we're making are simply to remove the exception for incandescent lamps of 150 watts or less. No other changes are being made to the restrictions on ground illuminating lights. The other thing is that we are adding LED lights to the definition of light source.
Okay, so party lights are not counted in this.
No, I think they are now because they're coming into the definition.
Well, I don't think if they're the string you're talking about buying, like a plug-in, I don't think that would fall under category that could be picked up by code compliance anyway, because they're temporary. They're just plugged. Otherwise, they'd be telling everybody to take down their Christmas tree lights and things. They're not, if they're not permanently affixed to the house. That's one comment. The second one is.
That's not in the definition we saw. I don't think that's in the definition in the ordinance, is it?
I think staff has
Yeah, I think the one thing that I would like to focus the commission's attention on is that we're not specifically making any changes that would affect those party lights specifically. Restrictions that applied to the party lights before would still apply. And this change, removing the exception for incandescent lamps, would not affect those specifically. So,
right, because this only applies to incandescent lamps, and party lights are not incandescent lamps.
But it's putting in LED into the category as the other part of it, of lighting, right? Council, did you have something to add to that?
Yes, Ben Dorth County Council.
To help us?
I think what Mr. Morris is saying is that the change, so to the extent that party lights are regulated now, they were regulated before this change. So this change is having no impact on whether or not they're regulated. It's just removing this small exception for incandescent lights, but it's not changing the lighting standards in terms of how we would regulate party lights.
Okay, but isn't it two parts? It's removing the 150 watt incandescent exemption, and it's adding LEDs into the lighting definition. So before, maybe if these party lights were LEDs, maybe they weren't counted as lighting, but now they would be with bringing those into the definition.
Or they were above 150 too. Now they're going to, now they can be under.
Yeah, I would. So Ben Dorth, County Council again. So it's. I think I would read that definition as just being more specific. I mean, it was general before, including all lighting sources. And I would say that it would have included LEDs prior to this change. This change just makes it very clear that it includes LED lights.
Well, and then makes it clear that party lights fall afoul of our ordinance, which puts us in a problematic situation if we've clarified that they're not allowed and lots of us have them and love them. I'm a little nervous about putting us in this situation and causing a code enforcement issue of calls on these lights. I get the dark sky intent, but are others
I agree.
Some thoughts on this? I don't quite want to go there.
Yeah, I don't want to go there either, to be honest.
Is there another area where ground illuminating lights are defined, or is this it?
So, if I may, I've brought up the actual ordinance amendment here. As you can see, the only thing that is changing, and we can read through the whole thing if you want, but is that exception for incandescent lamps of 150 watts or less. So the rest of the standards for ground illuminating lights are remaining the same.
So this will also affect people have uplit landscape lighting, uplighting trees, things like that.
Well, these are lights specifically used for ground illumination.
I guess that seems a bit vague. Used for ground illumination, if we take the party light example, are they or aren't they? And we do. We use them for illumination to see our pathways. We don't. So do you have some ideas over there?
No, I just kind of wanted to jump into the fray just to confuse this seemingly simple thing even more. Because I've done my diligent research on my planning commission provided tablet here, and an incandescent bulb for a string light is about 11 watts. So if we're in a community where someone is very concerned about this lighting issue, they're going to, my personal opinion is they're going to run with this issue. And while LED is 1 watt in comparison to an incandescent 11 watt, how do we define the length of the string and how many bulbs and are we hitting the target number here? And I just feel that those string lights are really important to a bunch of homeowners. And if there's a zealous community person, that would prefer a dark sky, I just see this compounding.
Well, so we're uplit trees. A lot of people uplight their trees now. And my house, I have uplit trees. And when the lights go off, it's very dark. When they're on, I can see walk everywhere around the property. So I understand it's for pathway light or ground lighting only. But, you know, somebody could take that and say, well, it does light the ground, so we're going to add those in, you know, if they wanted to interpret it that way. So another comment is Anne, I never expected you to take this much heart to disco lights.
Yes.
Well, I got a whole other layer of the onion for you there.
Well, and I think if you read the last sentence, party lights may already be covered. Where any light source is, if it's intended for ground illumination, as Anne says hers are, is located at a height greater than 8 feet. So those are already covered, and I don't think you get a ton of complaints. So the party lights may be safe. Mm-hmm. I mean, if
I could chime in here again, North County Council. And so the section, so the introduction to the section says that the standards of this section are applicable to all outdoor night light sources installed. So my question would be, is plugging in a light, installing it, you know, this we're pulling hairs now, you know, but we also have, you know, discretion in terms of how we approach code enforcement. So to the extent that we got calls on these party light strains, I'll go out on a limb here and say I don't think that would be a high priority for code enforcement resources to pursue that. That being said, I mean, if you have suggestions for how this could be remedied, that we could carry forth to the board, we can certainly do that. But my interpretation would be that based on the word installed, plugging a light in does not mean installed, and so it wouldn't apply to any light source that is simply plugged in.
Well, maybe we write something that's like anything that's temporary instead of installed, or add both. And then the landscape lighting too, it's in, you know, the second one, that it's gone now, but, you know, I mean, if you're on a corner lot, how do you point your light? You're uplighting your trees. If the car's on the right side of the street, you can see it, left side doesn't. And I agree with Commissioner Lieberman, as far as if somebody really wants to argue this, they got a kind of a valid complaint if they can see a light.
This just beckons back to those policy-making decisions where we talk about unintended consequences.
There's a lot here.
I understand the board gave direction to make this happen, but I see unintended consequences and community zealots being cranky around the string lights around my hot tub. Should I be in the unincorporated areas of the county?
It's a broad range. Broad range here. Didn't I say
at the end, though, you needed to be able to see it within 1,000 feet in that definition? So, I mean, this is only stuff visible at 1,000 feet as well, right?
So that 1,000-foot reference is where any light source intended for ground illumination is located at a height greater than 8 feet, the required shielding shall extend below the lowest edge of the light source, a distance sufficient to block the light source from the view of any residential use within 1,000 feet of the light fixture. And that is in the existing code, and we're not making any changes to that.
So I think that I still think the party lights are safe. I think the uplit trees may be in danger.
What we're willing to let go of. It's a tricky one here. And I was just out walking last night enjoying the stars and looking for a dark place to enjoy it. So I fully appreciate the intent here to protect those opportunities and night sky views and see the stars. At the same time, as a walker and cyclist who kind of relies on lighting outside for safety, and it's not, it's possible to carry a flashlight all the time, but if you're walking home from a meeting or something, some lighting can be a great thing, or just feeling comfortable out in a neighborhood. Certainly some of that can be shielded, but I'm not sure where the middle ground is here. I don't know. I'm a little uncomfortable. I get the point that maybe this doesn't affect status quo, and it hasn't been a huge problem of enforcement calls on party lights. I just hate to go there, but I think it may call for more of a review of the lighting standard to solve this or provide clarity than we have in front of us here today. Do you have an answer up there?
Just a point of further clarification. So street lights located within public right-of-ways are actually exempt from the lighting standard. So regarding safety concerns and lighting of public right-of-ways, those are not affected by the lighting ordinance currently.
Well, I think what you're referring to is like an area like Cambria doesn't have street lighting, so the neighbors all have lighting around, which gives you fallout light onto your walks.
That's right. Yeah. Thanks. It's both, really. I mean, because when we tried to improve Main Street in Cambria for many years, we had arguments, and it was really a very contentious activity putting in a sidewalk and street lighting, because we had dark sky advocates wanting no street lights. And as someone who lived there without a car and went to a lot of night meetings across town and came home from work late at night on a bike, this prospect of walking on a muddy side of the main road with no lights and no sidewalk was very problematic that I don't think a lot of people understood. So, I mean, anyway, this is a bit challenging with some differing kind of perspectives and needs. And right, in a lot of cases, there aren't streetlights in residential neighborhoods, and it's just the residential lighting.
So I think on the string lights,
we actually pull this one and maybe say, just out of the concern for unintended consequences and maybe readdress it, maybe a little bit bigger of a review, it sounds like what you're looking for.
I would go along with that, or denying that or not approving that change.
I would agree with that. I'm a little concerned because this is something the Board of Supervisors requested, and I don't know if you want to give us any background as to why.
I know there are some night sky advocates, I suspect, from my neighborhood, and that have brought this, that have been along the lines of 20 years of arguments about lighting up our main street and wanting it to stay dark, that this is along the lines of that remaining thread.
We can make a motion, probably says we'd like to see language that says temporary lighting, like string lights, party lights, things like that wouldn't be inclusive of that. But the landscape lighting, especially, like a lot of people have landscape lighting, and I mean that's permanent, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean
that's wired in,
you know, and people love it. I love my landscape lights, so I think that's the one where I think you're right. It's going to be a little touchy. I don't know how you'd even.
Right. Well, what about that? Putting in some kind of just requesting that they put in a clarification that would exclude holiday and party light.
Yeah, if I could just add one, I think this really comes down to the definition of ground illuminating lighting, and that's really what we need to consider. I think the intent of ground illuminating lighting is something that's post-mounted or building-mounted that's intended to light the ground for safety purposes. I would think that the string lighting, patio lighting, landscape uplighting, tree lighting, any of that is more decorative and wouldn't be considered ground illuminating lighting. You know, again, this as Kip mentioned, it doesn't include what's in the public right of way, but this applies to parking lots, pathways to buildings, common areas, that type of thing, where a lighting level is required for safety. And that lighting is designed by a lighting engineer. You need 1 foot candle between, you know, fixtures. And I don't think you're going to get that 1 foot candle measure from any of these other lighting elements that we're talking about. So it's really the definition of ground illuminating lighting. And I think those other lighting types don't meet that definition.
So could we, I mean, I guess we haven't looked at that definition exactly of what the code definition of ground illuminating lighting is. So maybe we could just make the motion with a notation that would be separate from decorative lighting, such as holiday lighting and plug-in party lights.
Okay, that sounds like a motion.
Would you be comfortable with that?
Although I see staff maybe wanting to chime in. Go ahead.
Yeah, so if we go down to the next section here, which is not being amended, it says elevated feature illumination. So where lights are used for the purpose of illuminating or accenting building walls, signs, flags, architectural features, or landscaping, which I think would be what we would consider the party lights, the light source shall be shielded so as not to be directly visible from offsite. So that is already in the code, and we're not changing any of that.
It's a good point there. They are out of compliance, basically. It's all out of compliance, just saying let go of your tree lighting. And we all have them. Well, I mean, it puts us in a spot where we're all out of compliance.
Well, part of this is a true story, is the problem with the vagueness of it is, so on a residential commercial lot, you can have 1,000 square feet of material and equipment storage. This is currently going on. There's code enforcement interpreting that as construction materials and equipment for when you're building the project. But that's not what it says. The code says equipment material. So if there's equipment parked there full time, they're saying, "Well, no, that's not correct." So the definition of equipment in this other scenario is being interpreted by somebody, and it's being interpreted by somebody else differently. So that's why I think this. You know, you can't get vague, because if somebody really wants to argue it, they can argue it. So it should probably be more precise on what we're doing. And I guess we'll throw the landscape out of that, but we'll go back to the party lights. I think it should be something in there that says temporary lighting would be acceptable.
Would staff be able to add that?
We can add further clarification at the Planning Commission's direction.
It is a recommendation. This goes to the board, so we could tack on some.
Or we could just, have a recommendation. I mean, I do appreciate too what was said, that staff has flexibility in code enforcement as well, and that's maybe where that flexibility comes in. So I'm fine either way. I'll accept a motion.
So do you want to take these individually, or do you want to take these together?
I'd love to take them together, but...
Okay, so before a motion, a few more comments then. Some commissioners here have made comments about the added noticing cost and rigmarole, so noted. But I'm really glad to see the increased noticing. It wasn't just one project that we've seen some challenges there. It's been several over the years. In particular, in my district, there was an issue where, the address of the applicant was a little farther than the project site on a large ranch. So basically nobody got noticing because of the current rule with the parcel sizes. And that really wasn't fair to give people a chance to weigh in. And it cost us, if you want to talk about efficiency, it cost us a lot more, all of us and the applicant way more, because we had to continue the hearing and come back and redo it because they didn't have a chance to talk to the neighbors in advance of the hearing. So just like coming out with the project we continued today, they're going to try to work it out before hearing, and that's in their best interest than to have to come to hearing twice. So I'd say the enhanced noticing really improves efficiency for those worried about that in the process. And then, still, right, I've 39 years after Measure A, very interesting. So however that's come to light, I mean, there, again, some of our legislative ballot initiatives of how to actually enact those. So that may be one for the record to note that it's taken nearly four decades to actually incorporate into the ordinances and have those catch up. I'm happy to make a motion if people are ready. Are there other comments or discussion?
We're ready. I think the Measure A may be coming forward because of the threat of increased drilling opening back up in California. That's my theory.
Could be.
It's definitely not because we're behind. So, okay.
Because we're behind.
So go ahead.
Okay. So I would move that we recommend that the supervisors adopt an ordinance amending Title 22, Title 23, and the Coastal Zone Framework for Planning on these items. And I guess I wasn't clear whether we wanted to add some clarification. I would have staff clarify that we don't mean to clarify a distinction between decorative lighting and permanent lighting, so that decorative lighting wouldn't fall afoul of our
decorative temporary
decorative
like a good way
temporary lighting that wouldn't run afoul of our lighting ordinances that may prevent some code enforcement problems in the future.
Okay, there's a motion. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Did staff want to like take time and draft that or add that, or just you can take it under advisement?
Kip Morris, staff. I think for clarification, we would want to coordinate with code enforcement to make sure that the definitions that we have and that we use for any kind of exception for party lighting would be something that is enforceable and something that they could make in distinction. So I think it would be good to coordinate with them before bringing this forward to board.
Okay.
That's my expectation in making the motion, that that's not specific language, but that's a commission intent to have those accepted. So however staff make that happen.
And just if you're going to go, I wouldn't call it party lighting because that could conflict with places having wedding venues, things like that, and then they're going to fall. I'd say decorative temporary lighting, which would be kind of what you're talking about, instead of
so noted.
Even though you party and we're not, we're just wanting to.
So noted, as you would expect.
Non-drinking partier.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right, we have a motion and a second. How about a roll call, please?
Commissioner Wyatt?
Yes.
Commissioner Avila?
Yes.
Commissioner Lieberman?
Yes.
Commissioner Avila? I mean, sorry.
Yes.
Commissioner Viacana?
Yes. And Chair Shaw?
Yes. Okay, that is our last hearing item. Could I have a motion to take all testimony and correspondence into the record?
So moved.
And is there a second?
Second.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
And then a motion to adjourn to January 8th.
So moved.
Is there a second? All in favor?
Aye.
Yep.
And I will not be here January 8th, so we will have a substitute chair. Thank you. All right. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.